The typical workday for Allison Transmission's Vice President of Regulatory Issues and Hybrid Programs, Engineer Deborah Gordon, is not typical.
Well, it's not traditional, which is one of the things that I like about it. But in the things that I'm responsible for, we've been working with EPA and NHTSA, National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, about a new fuel efficiency rule for heavy-duty trucks and buses. So we've been doing that for about 3 years.
Female engineers like Gordon have set the stage for girls all over the world to get into engineering. I'm Uma Kocher Lakota, and this is the second episode of the WHJE podcast Woman Made. In the last episode, I discussed the history of women in medicine. Today, I'll be talking about the history of women in another branch of STEM, engineering. The concept of engineering has been around for as long as humans have been around. And from the very beginning, with basic inventions such as the wheel, until now, with supersonic jets and space travel, engineering has served basically the same purpose: to make life easier and to allow humans to do more than they could before. Since the invention of the wheel, though, things have changed within the fields of engineering. And maybe the biggest change is the split into what is now typically recognized as the five main branches of engineering: aeronautical, chemical, civil, electrical, and mechanical. The type of engineering that Gordon specializes in is called mechanical engineering. Mechanical engineering had its first big boom during the Industrial Revolution, when more and more of the world's finished products began coming from factories. With the popularization of the car and the two world wars in the early 20th century, mechanical engineering became even more popular and even more common. And compared to the illustrious history of engineering as a whole, the history of women in engineering is just as impressive. Famous female engineers came before engineering even became a common profession, and they often recognized themselves as inventors. These were women such as Ada Lovelace, who lived in the early 19th century and would later be called the first computer programmer, blazing the trail for both men and women alike. But despite its history, even a basic undergraduate education in engineering was not available to women until the early 20th century. And even then, the women who chose to pursue engineering were considered oddities, outside of the status quo, by their teachers and their classmates. The beginning of World War II helped increase the amount of women entering engineering, but the first woman to receive a doctorate in mechanical engineering wasn't able to do so until 1959. But even then, during the 1950s, less than 1% of all engineering students were women. Most people, like the man in this clip, promoting a college engineering program to boys, disregarded all women in the field.
Our engineers come out of classrooms just like yours all over the country. Some girls take engineering, but it's not a common thing, so let's eliminate the girls.
In fact, it wasn't even until the 1950s and 60s that the male-only universities began to accept small numbers of women into their engineering programs. And that was around the time that mechanical engineer and vice president of regulatory issues and hybrid programs in Allison Transmission, Deborah Gordon, was growing up. Gordon grew up in an environment traditional for girls at that time.
It was very traditional in that typically there were lots of stay-at-home moms, including my mother. And I was the oldest of three children. I grew up in Anderson, Indiana, and it was a very loving home. My father worked in a factory. My mom, as I mentioned, was a stay-at-home mom. And we did a lot of things with our family, our church, and that's what we did.
Growing up, Gordon had a passion for French, but still excelled in math and science.
I took all of the math and science classes in high school, but my real interest was French. And I went to France when I was in high school. I spent a summer there, and I lived with a family who spoke no English. So then when it came time to what do I want to do when I grow up, I decided there really wasn't a lot of money if I wanted to major in French. So I actually decided to go the math and science route. As I mentioned, I took all the math and science classes. However, I didn't really know what I wanted to be when I used that. And the kids in the classes were typically going either in engineering or they were going into medicine. And since I fainted when I got my ears pierced, I decided that medicine was probably not the thing for me. So I went to engineering school.
And even from those days, it was obvious that she had chosen a path that didn't include many women.
The high school I went to had, you know, the basic, you've got to take biology and chemistry and so forth, but they had advanced classes, which was totally an elective. And there were a few girls in the class, but it was still mostly boys.
Going into college, Gordon joined a cooperative program, which allowed her to get experience working and still learn at the same time. But even from then, she didn't necessarily fit the mold of a typical engineer.
I chose a cooperative program, which I would highly recommend to anyone who wants to go into a technical field. And maybe not to find what you do want to do, but to look at what you don't want to do. This was a cooperative program where I went to school for a semester, then I would work for a semester. And it would take 5 years instead of a traditional four-year school. When I started, I can remember one boss I had who asked me, you know, do you like to take things apart? I said, no. Do you like to figure out how things work? No. And then he proceeded to tell me that I would never make an engineer. So that made me really think about whether I wanted to go forward or not. And then it just motivated me all the more to be successful.
So what was your first job?
I was entering data into a computer all day long for a whole summer. It was a very dreary office with all men who were much older than I was.
As her time in the workforce continued, Gordon experienced a variety of environments as a result of her engineering background.
Oh, I've worked in so many places I really can't describe, but because I've always been an engineer, it's always been based out of an office, if you will. But I've also, worked for a manufacturing company. So, you know, in that time, I've worked on the manufacturing floor. I've worked with the people who, you know, machine parts, assemble parts, build parts, and so forth. So, been comfortable in that environment as well.
But one thing remained consistent.
I'm still in the minority. Women are, I should say, not just me.
In the past few years, the hashtag #ILookLikeAnEngineer has swept the internet. This hashtag is meant to encompass anyone who doesn't necessarily fit the mold of an engineer, women and people of color in particular. Let's take a listen to a report on the subject by San Francisco news channel KPX5.
For Isis Anjali, breaking the internet started when her office launched an in-house recruiting campaign. And almost overnight, she became the face behind a hashtag call to arms.
I chose #ILookLikeAnEngineer because it's intentionally inclusive.
Inclusive for anyone that feels excluded by an industry that is predominantly male and white.
And this trend doesn't really surprise Gordon.
I just view it as self-expression. I don't know what a typical engineer looks like because I've never seen one.
Gordon is part of an organization called Women in High Tech, which works to recognize female engineers and encourage more girls to enter engineering and technology fields. She's received awards from this organization for her past work as an engineer.
The Leading Light Award is given out every other year by Women in High Tech to recognize women in STEM who have certain accomplishments. Mine was quite a long time ago, recognizing the work that I did when I was chief engineer of our military transmission products.
Being a part of this organization, Gordon is interested in increasing the number of girls who are aware of and entering the engineering field.
Certainly, Women in High Tech, I support all the initiatives that we do there. I volunteer for various organizations that are promoting STEM-type initiatives. I'm doing this interview today, so anything that I can do to promote that, I will. I think the schools need to have an outreach program such that the universities have a way to draw women in and show that there is value in an engineering degree. I think the high school counselors need to understand more about what engineering is so they can give better guidance to students so they might be able to choose it in the future.
Gordon's advice for young girls entering engineering stems from her own experience as an engineer.
The thing that I've learned about engineering is that it is so broad that there is something there that with a technical background, you can do just about whatever you want to do and find a niche that you like. There's not, a pre-programmed, you know, as was talked about earlier, you know, this is what an engineer looks like. Well, I don't know that there's any typical, this is what an engineer does every day because it is so broad. I mean, 10 years ago, I had never even gotten involved with emissions, which is the work that I do full time now. So it's you can do what you want to do with it. I would advise anyone to go into it if they like a technology field, because it does open so many doors and you can find a niche that you like.
Although the number of female engineers remains low, it is increasing slowly but steadily, with initiatives like Women in High Tech and movements like the hashtag #ILookLikeAnEngineer encouraging clear progress in getting girls interested in engineering. For more information about this podcast or for more stories like this, visit whje.com. For WHJE Radio, this has been Uma Cochrane Lakota.